BBC Sounds. Music, radio, podcasts.
Good evening. It's rare to find a story on In Touch which visually impaired people have been almost unanimous about. And it's equally rare to find that their view has resulted, so it seems, in a U-turn on public policy. But that's the case with the controversy that surrounded rail company and government plans to close station ticket offices, arguing that the demand for them has dramatically fallen. Meanwhile, though, at least two consultation processes have been taking place, and we know that visually impaired people have been amongst the most vociferous groups to oppose this move, explaining why technology, station ticket machines just don't do the job as far as blind and partially sighted people are concerned. But earlier today, the Transport Secretary, Mark Harper, announced a sharp change of direction. His statement is read for us.
The consultation on ticket offices has now ended, with the government making it clear to the rail industry throughout the process that any resulting proposals must meet a high threshold of serving passengers. We have engaged with accessibility groups throughout the process and listened carefully to passengers as well as my colleagues in Parliament. The proposals that have resulted from the process do not meet the high threshold set by ministers, and so the government has asked train operators to withdraw the proposals. We will continue to work to reform our railways with the expansion of contactless pay-as-you-go ticketing, making stations more accessible through our Access to All programme, and £350 million funding through our Network North plan to improve accessibility at up to 100 stations.
Well, reporter Peter Ruddock can bring us more of the details about this. I mean, we've heard what the minister said. What sort of reasons did he give for this decision?
Yes, I'm not sure what the train version of a U-turn is, Peter. A loop in the track, perhaps. Essentially, there has been a feeling that these proposals just go too far, too fast. And essentially, the Transport Secretary, Mark Harper, today recognising that. The passenger watchdogs that put this consultation together said they'd received 750,000 responses. And as you say, groups representing older passengers, disabled passengers, visually impaired people, making up a huge number of those. And there were concerns, essentially, that the machines, apps, just weren't a good enough sort of replacement for a ticket office. There was concerns about staff essentially wandering around stations and people not being able to find them. Now, Transport Focus said that the train companies, to their credit, did come up with proposals that would deal with this. Things like welcome points, essentially a one-stop place at the entrance to a station. But they said because these proposals had been sort of come up on the hoof, if you like, in midway through the consultation, the public hadn't had enough time to look at the details. And unfortunately, with not enough details, there just wasn't enough for them to say that these proposals were okay to go ahead.
How much do you think the campaigning that's gone on, and perhaps particularly from our programme's point of view, visually impaired people, how much has that been at the kind of root of this change of heart, do you think?
I mean, look, only a couple of weeks ago, the Department for Transport were saying these proposals would improve accessibility. You had the Prime Minister saying they were good for the industry, for the rail network. It's clear that this huge number of responses, in particular from visually impaired people, have taken ministers by surprise. And clearly, you read the Transport Focus press release today, a huge amount of their concerns are around the concerns that were raised by visually impaired people, and essentially them saying, look, the train company's proposals to deal with that just didn't give them enough detail, really, for them to be confident this was a good enough solution.
Well, we had hoped that at this point we'd be joined by Robert Nisbet of the Rail Delivery Group, which represents rail companies. Unfortunately, he wasn't able to join us. However, we do have a statement from the Rail Delivery Group. Peter, would you just like to read it for us?
That's right. So the Rail Delivery Group saying, look, these proposals were about adapting the railway to the changing needs of customers in the smartphone era, balanced against the significant financial challenge faced by the industry as it recovers from the pandemic. The statement going on to say, while these plans won't now be taken forward, we will continue to look at other ways to improve passenger experience whilst delivering value for the taxpayer.
Peter, thank you very much indeed. Well, earlier today, as Peter mentioned, Transport Focus, which is an independent transport watchdog, which has been running public consultation for the last couple of months, published its results, and its director, David Sidebottom, is also with us. David, perhaps the most striking thing about your consultation was the size of the response. What can you tell us about that?
Yeah, huge. And I think talking to experts on the whole principle of public consultation, this is one of the largest, if not the largest, ever seen in this country, which is quite staggering. And I think, as you said earlier, the breadth of the response at Transport Focus, we received just under 600,000 responses in our sister organisation covering London and the parts of the South East, London Travel Watch, took that total to nearly 750,000. So sort of huge breadth of response, but also, if I can say the word passionate, very, very strong, passionate individual stories from people, particularly people with visually impaired, and really concerned about what that would mean for their freedom, not just to manage the transactions at the station, that potentially if these protections were taken away about getting staff assistance, being able to buy a ticket in the way that they've been managing to do that for a number of years, what would that mean for their quality of life and being able to travel again. So really strong personal objections to the proposal.
Is there actually any way that you can assess how many or what proportion of your consultation did come from visually impaired people?
I don't have the figure in front of me, I'm afraid, but I would certainly say it was significant. I think the broad sort of three responses really sort of boil down to really the kind of broad categories. That can I buy a ticket, the right ticket at the right time to get on the right train? And that applied to all passengers. This concern that I would be queuing at a ticket vending machine, whether I had staff support or not, and particularly from disabled passengers more generally about, again, how that would impact on their future journeys. But also specifically for assistance for disabled passengers, that ability to turn up and go on the railway that is there now. Yes, there could be some improvements. We know that's a long-running story. But if that was removed, what would that mean for me and for my journeys in the future? And also getting access to staff, particularly at bigger stations, when there's large-scale disruption across the network, you know, there may be engineering works or thinking about when there's ad hoc disruption on the railway, can I get the right information to help me plan my journey to get back home or wherever I need to go to?
So, David, plans like this don't normally just go away. What should happen now? And, I mean, what do you think the government and the rail companies should do?
Well, the government's announcement this morning seemed clear. You know, they're asking train operators to withdraw their proposals. And it's just worth reminding listeners that this whole process, the key question we're asked to look at is, will these proposals from train companies make things better for passengers in a nutshell? And I think the proposals now, as we've objected to on a number of broad areas, the ball is very much firmly back in the court of the train operators. We've already seen today at least two train operators agree to withdraw their proposals. Now, whether that's the domino effect, we'll see more do the same.
Because really there are 14 of them, aren't there, I think? And, well, at least 14.
There are 13, I think. But it's in that case, yeah. I've been working on it for 4 months. So there's a lot of numbers in my head today. But, yes, there's certainly, you know, there's more work to be done. And as your colleague rightly said earlier, there are some interesting proposals in the detail. And I think, you know, some of these things need to be worked through, particularly with disabled passengers and disabled passenger representatives, if they were to see the light of day. We don't know what's going to happen next, but we've already seen two operators withdraw their proposals.
Right. Do stay with us, David. Many visually impaired people responded to the consultation, as we've heard, off their own bat. But it's fair to say that there was a very concerted attempt at response mounted by the RNIB, the Royal National Institute of Blind People. Lindsay Coyle is its UK campaigns manager. I mean, you're obviously very satisfied with this result. I mean, how many responses did you deliver, do you think, went through you?
Well, firstly, in answer to your first question, we're delighted that the voice of blind and partially sighted people has been heard. And in terms of responses, we know that at least 2,000 supporters wrote directly to their MP, in addition to those who responded to the consultation. So that meant that we could reach 9 out of 10 MPs. And certainly this issue, when it was debated in Parliament, MPs were reading out experiences from blind and partially sighted people. I look after our local campaign activity within RNIB, and we were supporting individuals to actually respond to the consultation, to really share their views, to try and really make that impact, particularly on things like social media, so we could actually demonstrate that actually when you're at a station in situ, it can be really quite difficult to purchase a ticket with a ticket machine. And it's that having that static point of assistance was really absolutely vital. So I think it was really a concerted effort to really get the voice of blind and partially sighted people directly through to decision makers.
And one idea that was floated during this debate was that of the on-concourse help for visually impaired people, you know, who'd be out on the station. Was this really such a bad idea?
Yeah, the research that we conducted showed that 88% of blind and partially sighted people who responded said that having that static point of assistance was really important to them making a journey independently. So it's knowing where you can go. I mean, I'm visually impaired myself, and I've been at train stations where I think, is that a member of staff, or is it just somebody wearing a red coat who happens to be a member of the public? And and it can be quite embarrassing. So I think to know for passengers with sight loss, to know where that assistance can be found, where the ticket office is, you often learn that route to get assistance. So it was about more than just buying a ticket. It was actually really that whole process of being able to get assistance, being able to have advice on your journey, if there's any changes to your journey. It was really having that holistic support, but knowing where to obtain that support from. That was really the important thing.
Well, amongst those who not only submitted the protests, but were involved in other ways with the campaign, of Flick Williams and Kevin Greenan, both of them joins us. He's a member of the National Federation of the Blind. Flick, if I can come to you first. I mean, how did you get involved? I think you're a wheelchair user as well, aren't you?
Yes, I'm a visually impaired wheelchair user, and I thought it was so important that we mount the maximum opposition to these proposals as possible. We organised a demonstration outside of York Station and circulated information about the consultation amongst all disabled and older people's networks in the city, and we had an excellent turnout. So I'm delighted at this announcement, and I would say it's properly gone off the rails. But that delight is slightly tempered by the fact that I think we can't rest on our laurels. We've had to put a huge amount of effort into effectively just standing still. But the size of the consultation response, you know, 750,000 people, that should be used, in my view, as an opportunity for, you know, the train operating companies to actually learn about what the needs of disabled people are and how they can actually set about improving their services.
What would you want them to do? Because there is a genuine issue of, you know, trying to make the best use of finances. We expect our public bodies to do that. You know, they have always argued that the number of tickets that are bought has gone down to about 12%. And so it's not wrong, is it, for railways, for governments to look at the best way to spend their money?
Yeah, but it's also about equality, isn't it? Because, you know, we are fair paying passengers, just like non-disabled members of the public. And if we require passenger assistance to enable us to travel, you know, that's just in line with equality legislation that was also hard fought for a long time ago. So really, it boils down to what kind of society do we want? Do we want one that includes everybody and allows people, you know, to participate in every aspect of life independently, or do we not?
Let me bring in Kevin Green in. I mean, the National Federation of the Blind, that's what Flick has just said, is part of its remit as well. So what do you want to see now?
Yeah, well, first of all, Peter, I'm really pleased to hear the news this morning. I think it's marvellous that, you know, hopefully we have finally been heard. One thing I would like to see is staff at all stations to make sure that there is staff available and that people can turn up and go in safety when they want to. Purely for health and safety, it's great that we're going to be keeping ticket offices, but I would like to see more stations being staffed, not just part-time, full-time staff. And I'm glad, you know, I really am pleased about that.
That would mean higher fares, wouldn't it? Somebody's got to pay for that.
Well, there's always it's a catch-22 situation, but you know, we do need health and safety. Now, obviously, when stations are closed, one wouldn't need staff, but certainly when during operating times, especially in smaller stations, they would be good. But we've got to consider, you know, people, not only blind people, people in wheelchairs, people with who may be vulnerable for other reasons. But, you know, I really am pleased that we have achieved this in the first place.
So, and you're talking there, for example, presumably about late at night, when you can quite often come upon, you know, come to a station and find there's absolutely nobody there when you've got to get off it somehow.
Yes, that does make one feel vulnerable. And certainly I would not like to travel late at night if I knew there was going to be nobody there to assist, especially in the present times in which we're living. It's important that there should be somebody on hand.
Kevin Greenan, thank you very much indeed. I just want to quickly go back to David Sidebottom of Transport Focus. These ideas do not usually go away. What are you expecting to happen next? What do you want to happen next?
Well, I think the under the sort of strict rules by this procedure takes place, the train operators have two choices. One is that they withdraw their proposals based on our objection, or it gets escalated to the Secretary of State. Now, we've heard from the Secretary of State today saying the train operators should be encouraged to withdraw their proposals. So in this immediate fallout, I'm not entirely sure. What I would say is that some of the train operators we've been talking to over the past 4 months are keen to see where these decisions go. But I think, you know, the fact we've seen two operators withdraw their proposals today, it may send a signal in the short term. But to coin a railway phrase, these ideas might be shunted out of the sidings to come back onto the network again. And, you know, we might be talking 1, 2, 3 years away. Absolutely no idea. But what's been very clear through that huge response from passengers, there's a huge amount of information that the railway should be looking at now and saying, how do we make this better for passengers? Because that's what we've had to focus on this as part of our review. Well, all these plans and proposals have got to make the railway better.
Well, what you can rely on is that In Touch will continue to keep an eye on this story. And we'd like your responses. Now, anyone regret this decision from the point of view of visually impaired people? I said it was unanimous or almost unanimous. If you know otherwise, tell us. You can email intouch@bbc.co.uk. You can leave voice messages on 0161 836 1338. Or go to our website where there's more information. From me, Peter White, all our guests, and also Beth Hemmings, the producer, studio manager Jonathan Esp. Goodbye.